Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase? Question mark? Elijah Campbell at our Hillside Medical Games Studios. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase? Question mark? He's out today. He's playing PD. He's a suit today. Even though I don't think he'll be in a suit, but he's a suit today. He'll rejoin us tomorrow. But we got lots to get into. Willie Donick is in L.A. That's next up for the Predators Thursday evening, tomorrow night. Remember, a little bit later start, 9:30 puck drop on Thursday evening. I'll have pregame for you at 8:30. Willie and his crew will have their pregame at 9 o'clock, and we'll see if the Predators can keep this train rolling. Nice win last night in Vegas, 3-2, where they had to hold on for dear life to beat the Golden Knights. This just in, Vegas is really good. They were missing some really, really key players. But, boy, did they pour it on in the third. They were not going to just concede after the second Philip Forsberg goal. It's 3-0 in the third and say, okay, on to the next game. Nope. They fired up the engines and said, here we come. And they outshot Nashville 22-5 in the third period. So, good game and a good win for the Preds.
A very good win, and I thought, you laid it out perfectly there. If you didn't stay up and watched it, that was the game in a nutshell. Nashville, I thought, took advantage of Vegas, who was down a couple of key players, Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty. Those are two very important guys for sure, but they still had been winning a ton of games. They had won 10 out of 13, 10-2-1, and a handful of those games were without both of those players. So to hold that team to two, that's one of the highest scoring teams in the league. And I think when it's all said and done, they're going to be one of the top two, three favorites in the NHL, especially coming out of the West. I still think if you look at Colorado and Vegas, they've got firepower that others don't have. But it's another illustration of just how good UC Saros is every night. He just keeps his calm. They got a couple on him in the third period, but I think there would be a lot of teams and a lot of goalies that would have cracked there and not them. And that's where I think Nashville is better than Colorado or Las Vegas. They've got a goalie that's better than either one of those teams, hands down.
Yeah, and I brought up last night in pregame what Mike Kelly, and we'll effort Mike Kelly, and we already are. We're going to try to get him on this week, hopefully, maybe Friday's show, but it could come tomorrow. I don't know, but hopefully we're shooting for Friday from NHL Network. We've had him on before. He's their analytics guy. He's really, really good. And I brought up in pregame what he had said yesterday, I believe, on NHL Network, on kind of like their afternoon show, and he talked about the importance of UC Saros. There's no other team that's in contention, no other good team in the league that basically relies on UC Saros and is getting better production out of their goalie than the Nashville Predators. And, I mean, I think in this market, nobody's going to push back on that. Like, we all know that stuff. But it's always interesting when you get the national guy, right, with perspective and numbers to back it up and to throw that out there. So, like I said, I wasn't floored by it because we talked about UC Saros yesterday with David Poile. I mean, and like I said, in this market, we're tuned into what he's about. We've been watching him for a long time. But, you know, to see somebody on a national stage like Mike Kelly, who does a really good job with NHL Network and NHL.com, throw that out there, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's probably eye-opening for people around the league, but I think the more we watch UC Soros here, the more it's just, that's UC Soros. His save percentage last year was .927. This year it's .927. For his career, it's .921. If you look at his numbers, he's been in the league now. This is his seventh year. The numbers don't change a whole lot. If anything, they get better. So I just think people probably this is the thing. Until he wins some playoff series, yeah, he's not going to be considered at the top.
Sure. That's how it works in sports.
That's fair. But I still don't think people realize how good he is. The other thing that I think is very apparent is he makes difficult saves look easy. He doesn't make highlight reels a lot of times with flailing, crazy, acrobatic saves.
Flopping like a fish out of water.
Because he's just so quick and able to get to the spot with technique. That's what Chris Mason is always pointing out to us. So it's amazing. And the numbers don't lie. That's what Mike Kelly has put out there. And we've been putting out the same numbers. Sport Logic is what he refers to. That's sort of his thing. We use those numbers on our broadcast as well. And so we've been pointing it out. And that's why I still think it was a crime that he finished sixth last year in the Vezina Trophy. Clearly, some of the GMs did not look at those numbers very closely. But he elevates the team. That's the point that I think Mike Kelly is emphasizing. He's turning a good team into a scary good team. And that's what I think is starting to happen here. This is not a team that's going to blow people away with firepower. But when you have a goalie that tips the scales, makes a big difference.
Look, no Mark Stone. He's a really good player.
Oh, he's
Max Pacioretty. Look at my notes. He's a pretty good player. No, he's a really good player. Robin Lehner is their number one goalie, right? Remember, they've moved on from Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury lost in overtime last night at the United Center as the Blackhawks goalie. Robin Lehner is the guy that's been making all the starts. I think he had 24 starts this season. Not available. Their number two goalie, not available. Hagan Martinez, a really good defenseman, solid defenseman, not in the lineup. Now, you know, you can bring up Jack Eichel, but Jack Eichel's been out all year, and who knows if or when he's coming back. And he will. He'll come back at some point. But he's on long-term IR, and he's dealing – what do you have, the wrist surgery? Is that right?
Back surgery, I thought.
I mean, the back surgery, right.
No, which is, neck. Jack Eichel has a
very – oh, I thought it was back.
Jack Eichel has a neck disc problem.
Oh, which is always tricky. Fixed. Always tricky. You never know, right?
It was very tricky because that was really the source of the fallout with Buffalo. Buffalo wanted him to have the traditional type of surgery. It's called fusion surgery. Jack Eichel and his camp demanded to have what the wrestler had. You guys know who it is, familiar with it. It's the new artificial disc that you put in there. It's more of a breakthrough type of surgery. It had never been done on an NHL player before, and the Sabres wouldn't let him do it. And so that's where it just hit a standstill, and it took all that time to work it out all through the summer. They couldn't agree. He demanded to be traded. Nobody made the trade until Vegas stepped up. So now he's had the surgery, and he's training. It remains to be seen when he'll join the team. They're also, by the way, $10 million over the salary cap because that's what he makes, $10 million. Yeah.
It's so feeling that's like a small Kucherov thing. That's what
That's the option they could do to get around that. And so that may well be what he does. But the question is, if he's ready to go March the 1st, are you going to really keep him from playing? He hadn't played in a long time.
This is what I would love to know.
Then you got to shed a lot of payroll.
Well, but this is what I would love to know behind the scenes. So the answer is, was Kucherov ready? See, I would love
question.
To know privately, you know, when was he ready? Was it just conveniently right as they were getting the playoffs? I don't believe that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to know, like, when exactly was he ready? Could he have started playing? But that wasn't the plan. And the same will hold true for Jack Eichel, right? I think at some point he's going to be available, And they're going to be like, yeah, but we're not going to get rid of, you know, these players because we can get to the playoffs and we're fine. And it may cost them a seed. Big deal. I don't think they're gonna worry about a seed. And, you know, get him in the mix. They don't have to shed anybody once you get to the playoffs. So that's what Tampa did with Kucherov. So I suspect he'll be out for the regular season. The point of this was to show you how much respect, and, you know, it's Vegas, so the books are there, and they obviously get a lot of action on the Golden Knights, and that I've read, I know this, that they've been hit hard at times by people pounding Vegas, and it pounds the books, right? So they've probably lost a good chunk over the Golden Knights over the years because they've been so good. I was shocked with all those players out. I mean, they're starting Logan Thompson, guy who had logged 8 minutes in the league, had never started. They're two goalies, unknowns. I mean, Logan Thompson, who started, undrafted guy, and Vegas was still the favorite and a pretty heavy favorite. I'm like, how can that be? Like, how's that possible? The Predators, I mean, I know Dante Fabro was out. He's on the COVID list, but other than that, I mean, nothing against, you know, Novak, who's played really well, who's on the COVID list as well. And I know Tomasino was a healthy scratch, but the Predators were intact. I was like, how can Vegas be still a heavy favorite with all those horses out of the lineup? Which makes you wonder, like, gosh, how good is this team when they are going to be back out on the ice? That's the scary part.
It's also, I think, part of the perception of the Predators. We show those lines. We have the sponsorships on our broadcast. Mm-hmm. You know, the money line.
It was like 75%.
Yeah,
Vegas.
It sure was. It very often swings that way. And the Predators, they're 11-6-1 on the road. So they're going into places. They've won in Dallas. They've won in St. Louis. They've won now in Vegas. They've won in New York against the Rangers. A lot of those games, the money line was 75-25. So I still think there's a perception of the Predators that doesn't factor in how good they are. The Tanner Janots, the Yakov Trenins, they're still unknown around the league, and I still think UC Saros is underrated. But it's a really interesting point you made. Logan Thompson, I think they chose him over their backup goalie who's been allowing a lot of goals. Logan Thompson actually is a prospect, even though he's an undrafted, unknown guy. If you look at his numbers in the AHL, very, very dominating. So I thought he played a really good game. I thought the Predators probably could have been ahead by more than three had he not made some pretty good saves.
I agree. Let me just say this before we have to break, and we'll get to Paul Feinbaum on the other side for our weekly chat with him that we always enjoy. Hats off to our man Pete Weber. Riding solo
that was
last
awesome.
Night, man.
That was awesome.
First, I asked him in pregame on the visit to the booth because Hal Gill slid over and was doing the television broadcast with you. Chris Mason, unfortunately, out. I don't want to say on the trip. I don't know the time frame. I know he was out last night on the COVID list, right? He tested positive. So.
Yeah, he tested positive, and then he's had three negative tests since then. But it's one of those weird things where, you know, they're taking precaution. They didn't want to put him on the plane if there was any question, and so they held him back. It's just the life we live now, right? I have to duck out and get tested here another hour or so.
That's right.
It's just you heard David Poile talking about the day-to-day life now. So Hal slid over, and that left Pete solo. And, man, that was an interesting game to do solo, right, with all those icings and all those shots.
Oh, I know. 1976. I just flat out asked him. I was like, Pete, I don't know the answer to this. I suspect it's been a long, long, long time. When's the last time you did a hockey game by yourself? He said 1976. I was like, holy cow.
Nick Barnaski asked that on the bus on the way over, and he had the answer ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
And I started laughing. I was like, I knew he would know.
Yeah, of course, he knew he's the done matchup, hundreds too.
He's done hundreds of minor league baseball games solo, which I would contend is more difficult than doing a hockey game solo because the action just keeps coming at you. And I know we got to get to Paul, but that was definitely a salute worthy there, Pete Weber going solo last night.
Tip of the cap to Pete Weber. Great job last night. We'll come back. Hey, Paul. We'll talk to Paul Feinbaum next. You know what that music means. Every day, 2 o'clock, can flip over to 94.9 and listen to this man's show, the Paul Feinbaum Show, 2 to 6, Monday through Friday, and he now joins us for his weekly chat, and he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick, now Paul Feinbaum. Paul, it was we were at Nissan Stadium doing the show last Thursday in lieu of the Music City Bowl, and we knew it was going to be a great crowd, a great day, a perfect day for a bowl game, and we thought it was going to be a pretty easy Tennessee victory. We had had Jeff Brohm on, and he had told us about all the defections, all the guys that were sitting out, and I mean, he was losing so many key players. It was like, you know, Josh Heupel's going to finish off this storybook first season with a nice win in front of about 55,000 Tennessee fans in Nissan Stadium and come away with 8 wins, which nobody would have predicted, but we all know how it ended. That's not how it ended. What were your thoughts of the Music City Bowl that was trending on Twitter that day?
I thought it was a disgraceful end of the game. And I understand the call. It's been explained to me countless times, as you guys have. But it shows you why fans don't trust officials. And as one who's always tried to defend them, saying, oh, these guys do their best, blah, blah, I didn't see that. I mean, I saw a guy make blow a whistle for no reason, and then they tried to gin it all up by reviewing something that wasn't even reviewable. And I joked the other day. I said I'm going to consider it a win for Tennessee, and they had an 8-5 record, and a lot of people have gone crazy over that. But to me, it was just a shame, because I really felt that Tennessee had such a spectacular season, and what a great way to end it with that play. And I'm well aware, thank you, you 5 or 6 Purdue fans out there, for letting me know that Purdue still could have come back, but they wouldn't have. Tennessee would have won the game.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense in that spot, in OT, 4th and goal, why you think you would – why would you blow the whistle at that? It doesn't make – there's no common sense factor at all on why you would jump the gun on a play with such significance behind it.
Yeah, I mean, we all understand football, and there are reasons sometimes why officials need to blow the whistle for protection, but not in that spot. This was senior prom night. It was over. No reason for the curfew. And it was just it was disgraceful. I don't know. It's just I ran into a Tennessee fan yesterday. Said, we need to move on. No, you don't. I mean, you really. I think Tennessee fans should remain with pitchforks in the air and never let this go.
Yeah, I was obviously nervous for mustard bottles and golf balls at Nissan Stadium. I was really concerned. In fact, it was a good joke on Twitter. I saw people tweeting like, it's okay, you can do it again. It's like, this warrants it. You can do it again, which, we should never promote that, but in all fun. But it's just what a crazy, crazy ending. Do you think it was the right call? Let's put aside, we all can get on the same page about the call, and they should have never blew the whistle. Should you have gone for it in that spot? Believe it or not, Tennessee has not been good all season in short yardage situations. Should you kick the field goal and put the pressure on Purdue, or do you sign up for and agree with the decision to go for it?
Yeah, I like going for it. To me, you're in a situation where you haven't been able to stop them, so just roll the dice. I mean, it's a 7-5 season, or it's 7-6 or 8-5. I mean, we're not talking about a national championship on the line here. And I just like going back 6 weeks ago to the Auburn Alabama game. I mean, Auburn had a chance. They blew the lead. They came back. They had a chance to win it in overtime with a 2-point conversion, and they kicked the extra point. Like, you're going to stop Tennessee. You're going to stop Alabama at that point. You're not going to. And to me, it was just, okay, go. Take a shot. And, I had no problem with it. Statistically, analytically, it was probably the wrong decision, but it won't matter now.
Yeah, no doubt. The other thing that came out of that game is nothing new, as you know. We've all had these discussions for many, many years. It's been going on in college football. I don't know if it's getting any worse. I don't know if it could get any worse. It's just a part of the game. And it's not just at the college level. By the way, this just in, they do it in the NFL too. They just don't do it at the same rate that they do in college. A little bit more discreet and a lot less. But as you know, with the offenses in Division I football now, you know, players lay down on the ground or players try to get up and they're like get told to get down. And that happened again. There was a lot of, let's call it, fake injuries. And look, Tennessee was doing it too. Both teams were doing it. But Purdue was doing it at a much alarming rate. It does seem like some words coming out of Steve Shaw and others that it may be reaching the boiling point or breaking point in college football where they are going to have to address this in the offseason. Do you believe that? Because I don't. Like I said, what's changed? We've been watching this forever. I think it's been out of control for a long time. But do you think there's a real possibility that they're going to implement real penalties for, I guess, faking injuries to slow the play down?
I don't know how you can manage it, though, because you never know. You're playing Russian roulette with, okay, we're going to chastise you or penalize you, and just turns out that that's the real injury. So I think you have to manage it. I think the officials have to, you know, make some judgment calls on the sidelines, but I don't think you can legislate it. It's too tricky.
Yep. No, there's no doubt about that. I threw out, and because it is hard, it's also hard. Like, what do you do? Like, clearly a play is not a deterrent. Like, that's not stopping anybody. I said, what if you had to sit out a series? Would that change things if you knew you were out for the series? I don't know. I don't know what the – obviously, that's above my pay grade, but I just kind of feel like it's really, really out of control. It's not going to change. And, oh, by the way, because I sat there Thursday, Paul, and was like, you know, the Predators were playing, and we were playing the Music City Bowl on three networks, and I said, you know, here at 102.5 The Game, we're breaking away at 5 o'clock for Predators pregame. And I said, yeah, we'll be breaking away because this game won't even be close to being over. Like, who's kidding who? College football game in 3 hours? Like, no chance. And what did it go? Like, 4.5? I mean, that's the other part of this. That it just slows everything down to a screeching halt.
Yeah, and you know, what we're talking about, if the legislation has changed, is giving officials more power. I think they should have less. I'm not going to give the guy who made that call in that game the opportunity to use even more judgment on penalizing a team and maybe being wrong. So yeah, it's a great conversation, and Steve Shaw can talk until he's blue in the face, but nothing is going to change.
Talking to Paul Finebaum, talking some college football, SEC football. So, Paul, I want to get your thoughts, number one, on Caleb Williams and the another great example right now of how the system has changed so radically. Caleb Williams, for people that don't know, a young quarterback who has entered the transfer portal out of Oklahoma. And, you know, the words free agency, waiver wire, all of these things. But you can almost dangle yourself out right now and say, you know, how much money can you guarantee me in the NIL? And so we've gone to a new level here, haven't we?
Yeah, no, every time we think we have shattered the glass ceiling, something else happens. And this right now, I think, is one of the most amazing moments in college football history, because you've got a star player, everyone knows the backstory, who's essentially putting himself up for bid. And not only to other schools, but to his own school. Like, hey, just because I signed last time around doesn't mean I'm coming back next time. And yeah, I'm going to be a Heisman favorite along with Bryce Young and a couple of other guys. So pay me. This is where we are in the NCAA. And, you know, could some of this have been avoided? Yeah, years ago. But you know, the commissioners and the NCAA president and everyone else decided, yeah, we'll deal with it some other time. We'll keep preaching, as Mark Emmert used to, that, you know, this is amateur athletics. It's not. And I know it's painful. There are a lot of people out there that played high school football 20, 30, 40 years ago, or college football, and this is not the world that they lived in. And I'm fully aware of that. I'm old enough to remember that time. But this is today. And I don't know why. I find it pretty humorous. I mean, I just the fact that a young guy who you know, he's only been driving for a couple of years, can hold the entire world of college football up for grabs and make money off of it. Good for him.
Before we get your thoughts on the rematch coming up here, I do want to get you to weigh in on just what it's been like on your show with Kirk Herbstreit's comments. I don't know if Kirk could do it over again. It sounds like he sort of said maybe I should have said it differently, but we've had several coaches that agree with him that think that there is a strong case to be made for players to play in the bowl games. And there's obviously a very strong argument as to why these players certainly have the right to do what they're doing if they're opting out. But what's it been like on your show, that debate? Because I'll tell you what, on social media, it is nuts.
Yeah, it's broken down pretty predictably, and you know, there are a lot of purists out there. You know what he said, he believed that. Come on, I mean, you don't say something in front of 2 million people and not mean it. I've been on that show many times, and it's not like he isn't well versed. I mean, you could ask me something and I haven't thought about maybe, but man, that's something we've all thought about. And it's just the way people feel. And, you know, he caught a lot of flack about it because, you know, and I think the problem that you know, I mean, if you work at ESPN, which I do and he does, you're in a tough spot because you're at the network making all this money and having a stranglehold on the sport. So it comes off to many as being disingenuous. But I think if you played football and went through the wars like he did and others did, that's probably how you feel. And I mean, I get a call every day if somebody saying college football is going to be ruined. And I'm like thinking, I don't know. I just got back from Texas where a semifinal game was played in a $1 billion arena. And I'm going to another one Monday night where we'll see the same thing. And yeah, the audiences may not be as much as they were 8 years ago, but they're still, you know, 15 to 25 million people watching. And obviously, you know, Texas and Oklahoma are debating whether to spend $80 million to get out of the league. So I don't think the sport's going away anytime soon.
Okay, Paul, so give us your thoughts. I was a little, I don't know if the line has changed much, but I remember, you know, the night that the semifinals were over, one of the first things they said was Georgia is an early 3-point favorite. I was a little surprised to hear that. This looks like kind of a dead pick'em to me. But your thoughts on the rematch?
Yeah, it's the same, and you know, I wonder if we have a bunch of people who are just chasing bandwagons here. Most people picked Georgia to win the game the last time, and when Georgia lost, almost the chorus went up saying, "I'll never pick against Nick Saban again." So I think you're going to get that leading into Monday night, and I'm kind of in that camp. A wild swing at Georgia, or do you want to go with has been the surest thing in college football for 15 years, and that's Nick Saban? I think I had it explained to me by somebody the other day, and you know, he said it's like, you know, all highways leading to Indianapolis. Georgia has about 3 paths to get there. Alabama has about 6 or 7, and you know, which one makes more sense? And I think it's the Alabama path. I can see Georgia winning. Of course you can. I mean, that's not really hard to come up with. I mean, they're a really great team. But I just don't know, you know, and I'll spare you the X's and O's. I don't know what's really going to be that much different Monday night. I think Georgia will play more aggressively. Whatever they did not do correctly against Alabama the first time around, they'll tweak. There are a few major differences. John Metchie, the receiver, is out, but Brian Robinson, the running back, is much healthier. It's hard to run against Georgia, but yeah, I'm going with Bryce Young over Stetson Bennett. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not saying Georgia can't win with Stetson Bennett, but I'll take the guy who I know they can win with.
Okay, as we wrap this up, let's finish up with that. So you know these fan bases better than anybody. You talk to them on a daily basis. You hear from them daily. Okay, a lot of you would say, well, you lose to Alabama. There's no shame in that. Well, that's not exactly how SEC fan bases work. Ask Mark Richt when they weren't satisfied with him. Are they still satisfied with Kirby Smart, or how will the fan base react if they have this special season and their 2 losses, their 2 hiccups, are to Alabama?
It won't be easy. we won't quite be to the Mark Richt level, but It really depends on the game. And I think if Georgia looks the part and loses, it will be a little bit easier. But if we see anything resembling Atlanta, I think there will be a lot of criticism. I happen to think Kirby Smart has done a great job. But it's like, you know, in every era of sport, there is always that team that or individual sports like golf. I mean, there were years when Phil Mickelson was the best golfer in the world, except for Tiger Woods. These things happen, and I think that's Kirby Smart's misfortune right now. And we thought maybe the dam had broken when Jimbo Fisher beat Saban, but it doesn't look like it happened. It would be an unbelievable win for him, but I think should he lose and should it and if it turns out to be about the quarterback, I think that will make it even worse, considering he does have a 5-star quarterback on the bench that might as well be in the missing persons division, because we have not seen JT Daniels other than standing with a clipboard for about 6 weeks.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting for sure. Enjoy it. Thanks for doing this as always, and look forward to talking to you soon.
A pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. I happen to think Georgia's going to win, and I feel pretty good about it. But that sounds crazy to say it out loud, because you're picking against the greatest of all time. But I feel like they are going to win, but I don't know. That's interesting, right? Let's talk about that on the other side. Well, you said, you know, Georgia favorite, that surprised you. Okay, we'll do that on the other side. Adam Kaplan at 11 o'clock. We'll talk some NFL news with him. Of course, the news about Derrick Henry. Mike Vrabel will speak at noon. We'll carry that live. I think we're expected to be joined by Elijah Molden after the head coach talks. A lot more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. An oldie but a goodie, bringing us back from the break. Don't forget to go to the game, nashville.com/deals, to check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, $100, and you get 50. Let's see, wait a minute. Buy $100 and get $50 to the Woodhouse Spa in Nashville. I think it's the other way around. Plus, you can save 75% off Nashville Armory, the Beanbag Coffee and Tea Shop, Seafood Sensation, and you can get $50 free with a $100 purchase in downtown dollars. So remember, that's still up for grabs. Just go to thegamenashville.com/deals. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our show is presented by Creation CBD, curated for life. So you said you were surprised Georgia was the slight favorite. When Chase asked me on Monday what the line, I guess you were not, because I had not seen it. I had not looked. I said Georgia by 2.5. And I think at the time it was 3. I think it stayed right there at 3. So you're surprised Georgia's the favorite.
I think I am. I think that they played each other in the SEC championship, and Alabama won pretty decisively, didn't they? That was a neutral field, wasn't it?
They did.
So, am I crazy to be surprised?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of times it's hard to beat a team, two good teams like that going against each other in a month. It's hard to beat somebody twice. Isn't there that too? I mean, that's a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's what it boils down to me. I'm gonna put this in a very simple term, and I can't remember the first person. It might have been a John Madden. It might have been somebody trying to be like John Madden. But I think it was in reference to a defensive back. Maybe it was Dan Fouts. Maybe it was Charlie Weiss. I don't know. My brain is going crazy. But here is the point. There was a game that I watched years ago, and the announcer said, here's what the offensive coordinator told me. This cornerback here is going to be the MVP of the game. I just don't know if it's the MVP for our team or the other team. In other words, we're gonna force this guy to, we're gonna put him under fire and see if he can do it. I think Alabama is as good as any program at making the quarterback beat you. If you have a great quarterback, like Trevor Lawrence, maybe, who can have a great game, then you have a chance to beat Alabama. But what Alabama has done really well over the years, they take decent
Joe Burrow,
quarterbacks.
By the way, is another one.
No question about it. They force decent quarterbacks to have a great game. They put you in positions where you have to make the tough throws. That's what would worry me about Stetson Bennett. So to me, Stetson Bennett is going to be the MVP of the game, either for Georgia or for Alabama. Stetson Bennett has been protected really, really well all year long. Michigan was the perfect game for him. He had a great game, but Michigan was not equipped to make him have to be great, even though I think he played great. I just think he's going to be way more under fire against Alabama. And if he can play a great game, I think Georgia will win the game. But I think it's going to be up to him to have to make some tough plays at tough times. And he is limited, even though you got to tip your hat to him. He has held off the five-star recruit. You know, he's gone away and he's come back. He's a great story. And you have to admire him. But I do wonder if he can have the great game on the big stage. I think it's going to be a great drama. But do you agree with that? Stetson Bennett is going to be the most important player in
this
game.
There is no question. You're dead on right. I mean, you just think about it. I mean, the few times you're able to get Nick Saban and get Alabama and beat him has been what? Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow. Now, there was a Johnny Manziel once in a regular season game, and he didn't turn out to be worth much in the pros, but other than that, I mean, you're talking about
top-tier. But he had a phenomenal performance. Phenomenal performance against Alabama.
He did.
Yeah.
Top-tier. He was very, very, very good in college. So I'm just saying these other guys like have turned out to be great in college and also top-tier talents. And we'll see on Trevor Lawrence. We don't know yet. The verdict is still out. But obviously Deshaun Watson and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow looks like the real deal. I mean, he looks
regardless of how they do in the pros, we're talking great, top-level college quarterbacks.
Correct. And so, obviously, Stetson Bennett doesn't fit that category. He's been really good this year, but you're right. If you're looking for the X factor, you're not going to compare the two. I mean, Alabama wins the check mark easy with Bryce Young, but there are other categories I feel like Georgia wins. And I don't know if I want to go too easy. I mean, we know Georgia, to me, they're going to win the defensive box. They're going to check that box. There's a lot of good they do. Alabama's going to win the coaching box until Kirby Smart can get past it. You know, who's kidding who? Nick Saban wins it all day long, and you don't even think twice about it. But I will say this, and I know a lot of people will be like, oh, really? Like that, wow. Alabama's in the national championship game, and you feel that way? Well, I mean, when your standard is at the very, very top, yeah, I guess it's always going to be nitpicking if you're going to say something that has, you know, somebody scratching their head. I've watched these Alabama teams for a long time since Nick Saban's been there. What? We're coming up on actually, 15 years when he was hired? I think we just had that anniversary whenever he was hired at Alabama. And so we've seen a whole lot of greatness. I don't believe this is – I've watched a lot of their teams and have told people 3 weeks out from the national championship game, they're going to win it all. Like, nobody's beating this team. Like, you're not beating them. And, you know, I get pushback, especially from my Big Ten friends and others, and they tell me all the reasons that – and I'm like, I'm just telling you, you're not beating Alabama. This team is – I don't have that feeling about this team. And I know I'm saying it about a team that's in the national championship game again and was the one seed again. I've watched them this year, and I don't believe they stack up against some of the other Alabama teams we've seen in the past. I just don't. They're still good. They're really, really good, but they don't stack up to some of the better Alabama teams we've seen under Nick Saban. Agree or disagree?
I go back to what Eli Gold told us last week. I thought it was a very insightful interview. I think Eli laid out why I agree with you. They're not as stacked, and they're younger. And the way Eli put it was, you can't just have year after year after year players going into the first round of the draft and leaving early and just replenish perfectly every year. They've done it about as well as you can do it, but they were a little bit young, so they're not quite as stacked. But I do think they've improved. They still have these high-level recruits. I think they've improved from the beginning of the season until now. The other part that I think would have me you know, leaning towards Georgia would be that the bottom line is, even though it's the SEC championship and you got a chance to beat Alabama, Georgia, in the back of their minds, maybe even subconsciously, they knew they didn't have to win the game. They were going to be in the playoffs either way. Alabama absolutely had to have it,
yep,
or else it would have been very hairy. I don't think they would have gotten the nod when it was all said and done if they lose that game. So this will be different. This is for all the marbles. This is it. So, like, even Kirby Smart could have even, if he dared, and I don't know if he did or not, could have held a few things back in that game. Could have said, you know what, I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to see a few things in this game because I might have to beat Alabama again. I might keep a couple of things in my back pocket. I don't know if he did that or not, but he could have if he wanted to, because they didn't have to win the game.
There's a lot of people listening to that going, bunk, and I'm not one of them. I agree with you 100%. And you can say that, and they will never say it. I mean, Georgia would never, ever, ever say that. But you can't tell me there wasn't a little bit of that, because you're human beings. You know the lay of the land. You've been number one all year. You've been the clear-cut favorite, number one. And you're not going to lose to Alabama and get left out of the playoffs. Like, that's, you're not going to go from 1-5 losing to Alabama, who's going to be regarded as the top team every year in the league. They knew that. They knew they didn't have to win to get into the college, but it doesn't mean that we're not saying that they weren't trying to win. It's saying there wasn't the same sense of urgency. Alabama knew, because of the hiccup against Texas A&M, there's a real shot. Even that being said, they're Alabama, and they are held in the highest regards. That committee is not putting in a two-loss Alabama team over, let's say, an undefeated Cincinnati team or a Michigan team that won the Big Ten and beat Ohio State at the end and won the Big Ten championship. They're not going to get left, or they're going to get left out. Somebody else is going to move up. Oklahoma State, whatever. Somebody else will move up in that spot. Notre Dame, who didn't have to play the extra game. And they knew that. Alabama knew the lay of the land for them, and Georgia knew the lay of the land for them. And it doesn't mean that Georgia wasn't trying to win, but I agree with you 100%. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. Once again, we'll never know. We'll never hear that from Kirby Smart. We'll never hear that from Georgia. I mean, who knows? Maybe a player will spout that off someday down the line, right, when asked about it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they were holding some stuff back. Why would you show your card? Like you don't have in the back of your mind, hey, we may see them again? Oh, yeah, like that's really unrealistic, right? Like, who would think that?
Yeah, because you could argue, listen, if you'd beat them there, then you wouldn't have to play them again. You'd be done with Alabama, and you could wipe the rest of the field. But I just do believe in sports psychology, the sense of urgency. It would have been a little tougher to be in Georgia's position than Alabama's position. Georgia, the other thing that was so impressive, and maybe I'm contradicting myself, but Michigan came in. This was what was comical about Georgia's domination of Michigan. Michigan comes in, and they're reeling off all these awards that the Michigan offensive line won. Best offensive line, whatever the award's name was. I forget. Remington or, you know, I don't know.
Joe Moore Award, but I believe.
There you go. Best offensive line. Georgia and the defensive line completely
destroyed
them out. It was men against boys. The quote, best offensive line in the country. It was a mismatch. And on the other side, Maybe it was Holly Rowe. Whoever had the pregame interview with Kirby Smart, she says, well, coach, Michigan's got these great – yeah, we've got these great edge rushers. We've got Hutchinson on one side. You got the other side. You know, these guys are going to – I mean, they're great players. And Kirby Smart just turns to her and he says, you know, we think we've got some pretty good guys who can block them. And then, you know what? That was true. You know, those guys, you know, they had their moments. But did they put any extra heat on? Did they make Stetson Bennett's life miserable? No, not at all. These were great players that Georgia's lines on either side of the ball, they had no problem with. So they've got the manpower. There's no question about it. But it's Alabama. That's why this is to me going to be a great spectacle here.
Can't wait.
I can't wait for it.
I absolutely can't wait. I think also that that SEC championship game also was a nice little, you know, once again, coaches will never admit this, but sometimes, but actually you have heard coaches say this later on down the road. You know, maybe that loss wasn't the worst thing in the world for us, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And maybe
college basketball, I can think of a lot of examples. Remember Rick Pitino's powerhouse Kentucky team comes to mind. Remember they lost in the SEC tournament in New Orleans. I was down there. They lost to Dante Jones and Mississippi State, who ended up getting to the Final Four. This was 96. But I remember Rick Pitino saying exactly that.
Well, wasn't it Calipari that undefeated season when they end up losing to Wisconsin in the Final Four? Wasn't that what everybody was talking about? Like, you know,
yep.
maybe a loss in the SEC tournament.
Maybe a loss would have been the worst thing.
You know,
yeah.
Wouldn't have been a worse thing for you to kind of, you know, just to sense what that's like, put all that pressure off, and then get after it in the tournament. You know, it's something that's been heavily discussed, obviously, in sports and definitely in college basketball.
Oh, yes.
But you don't think that maybe privately Kirby Smart's going, you know, maybe this is a good little wake-up call for our team that we're not invincible. You know, we're not the greatest team of all time. We're not the greatest defense of all time because they got shredded on that day. And maybe that was a nice little wake-up call that maybe privately Kirby Smart was going, you know what, that's not the worst thing in the world. Now they're refocused. Because it certainly looked that way against Michigan. Because there were a lot of people thinking, duh, Michigan, duh. There were I saw a lot of people picking Michigan. Or a lot of people saying, this game is going to be tight. It was anything but that. Anything but that. It was a snooze fest. In fact, I was more impressed that Cincinnati kept it together more of a game than Michigan did.
Like Cincinnati, way more competitive. Way more competitive.
Like Michigan, it was very clear. Like, you're looking for other things to do. I mean, it kind of almost served as background noise. I mean, it was hard for you. I mean, you'd have to be really hardcore to hang in there and watch it play for play and just be, like, glued because it was pretty easy to see. Like, Michigan was completely, you know, they were outmatched. There was no way they were going to beat that Georgia team. At least that's the way I felt. And, of course, it played out that way throughout the rest of the game. And you could say, well, you know, it's a long game. I mean, things can happen. No, you could just see that Georgia was just, as you mentioned, all the accolades about Michigan, and they got blown up. I mean, it was almost like, well, were you talking about the same team, the same line? Because it certainly didn't look that way. That just goes to show you. So we will see. Can't wait for it on Monday, the national championship game. The ratings here for the semifinal games were really, really good in this market. I saw Mark Benda put it out with News Channel 5. They were really, really good here. The Titans-Dolphins game was just a tick below a 30 rating here. The semifinal games, I think, were second and third in this market. They didn't do great nationally, but they did, you know, no surprise, did really, really well here. And I'm sure the national championship game will have monster numbers in our market. We'll come back. Adam Kaplan. We'll switch gears. We'll talk NFL and Titans with him. We've talked to Adam for a long time. He does a great job at SiriusXM. We'll get his thoughts on some NFL topics to begin the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.